Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info. And today is Tuesday, December 20th. This is our, December 20th, 2016. And this is our 333 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally, we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we get started, I just want to say thank you, James, from North Wales, for continually sending us $20 a month so we can maintain all the hours we have of Michael on the internet. And we now are on hour 333. So, James, we all appreciate you. Thank you. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello.
Yeah.
Welcome back, and how are you?
Getting cold over here, too.
Oh, it is?
We had some snow on top of Haleakala that, you know, dusted a little bit at the top. But that's a little early. Usually we get it, you know, if it's snow, we get it around in February. But it's early.
Can you see the snow from your place?
No, it was just a light dusting.
Uh-huh. But if it's a heavy snow, or if you get a lot of snow up there.
Oh, yeah, then we have a snow-capped mountain, yeah.
In Hawaii.
Well, right now we have a snow-capped, two snow-caps on the Big Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's already telling us that we have a colder, say, winter. A lot of it is because of the inactivity of the sun. And the sun is cyclical in its nature. And, you know, in its activity, and it's been somewhat getting, it's almost like the sun is getting tired, but it's really not. It's reacting to its cycle.
Mm-hmm. I remember there used to be a downhill snow skiing club on the Big Island.
Mm-hmm. And they would keep their, you know, their skis ready.
And I often wonder, how do they stop? I mean, they run out of snow on the way down.
Yeah, then they start wearing out their skis on the lava rock.
I'll say.
There's no lift either, so they have to really...
no lift. Right.
Yeah, it's just like a lot of work.
That's a lot. That's a real seasonal adventure.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's just uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that are really making the trek up Haleakala are the bicyclers who, you know, I guess they got a list of riding their bicycles to the top of various mountains that have, you know, bike paths.
Mm-hmm.
And Haleakala is one of them. And you see these guys pedaling uphill. And that is these guys are really tough, man, getting up there.
Well, what's really tough is you need oxygen, and as the further you go, the less you get.
Exactly.
Because 10,000 feet it's pretty thin up there.
Very thin. You know, people who are not acclimated will really get
sick.
They get altitude sickness and they never even know they're getting sick, you know, because they get confused. The brain gets not enough oxygen and confusion sets in. And it's just
And if you're pedaling up Haleakala, you really need oxygen.
Mm-hmm. There was up at Mauna Loa, they're building the observatory up there. And they're making some modification, and this guy comes down, and he has a little scaffold, and he comes down from his scaffold, and goes over to the foreman, and says, "I can't understand it, you know." And he says, "What is it? I've cut this connection, this beam twice." and it's still too short. Catch on?
Well, if he cut it once and it was short, and he cut it again, it's still going to be even shorter.
He's confused.
He's confused.
This is a real event that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and had to said you need a little bit of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he grabbed some. By the way, my daughter, who's a pilot, you know, would drink ozone water. And she said something interesting. She went to this detox center in Mexico, and she said, you know, you guys are right on the cutting edge of all of the naturopath technologies, because they gave me ionized water, magnetic pulses, let's see, what else?
Ozone water.
Yeah, they get ozone. Yeah, ionized water, ozone water, and then you know some colloidal silver and things like that. And then you know, diet and stuff like that. But the technology, so it's all what we are using in terms of electricity for medicine concept. And she said, from when she first tried ozone water, she said, "Whoa, it's just like, feels like how I feel when we, you know, have some oxygen at high altitude. You know, it feels like it took a breath, a whiff of oxygen." So, and she's very well, I guess, attuned to her physical innate body, you know, yoga instructor and stuff like that. Well, anyway, that's interesting about that. We have those things which help us. So,
so she went to Mexico to find out her dad does her dad's been doing this already.
Yeah, it's been, you know, way of course I, you know, not going to be able to explain everything in two sentences, which she wants done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if it's real, then it should be able to be easily explained. But then, of course, it's... Well, I have time. Let's go. You run into that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, well, drinking ozone water, it's just great. Marcy says, I feel like I don't have to eat. It just gives me, you know, it's just... One time I was headed to Lambertville on my bicycle, and I thought, oh, I'm kind of hungry. Oh, maybe I'll just drink ozone water. And phew, boy, I shot down there. It was great.
Mm.
But it's... Oxygen can't be... Oxygen's the best thing for you. It's the most important thing. More important than water. You can only last about 3 minutes without it. Or you're in trouble in 3 minutes. But Paul Simone, oh, I usually don't say his last name. But okay. Well, anyway, one of our listeners, Paul, he gets these things from the Aranchi book, A Thought to Ponder from the Aranchi book. And I have two of them on here from him. And 11 December, he sends this one. Urantia belongs to a local universe whose sovereign is the God-man of Nebadon, Jesus of Nazareth, and Michael of Salvington. And all of Michael's plans for his local universe were fully approved by the Paradise Trinity before he ever embarked upon the supreme adventure of space. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty neat. And Paul, I read these, and it's like I've got to read the Aranchi book more than I do. And this other one, December 15th, he sends this one, A Thought to Ponder from the Aranchi book. Midwayers are not men. Neither are they angels. but secondary midwayers are, in nature, nearer man than angel. They are, in a way, of your races and are, therefore, very understanding and sympathetic in their contact with human beings. Okay, any comment, or should I go on?
Yeah, you ever had any contact with anything like a midware? Anyone like a midware? Let me explain something about the progress through the psychic circles. This is a fundamental progress map, you might call it, and to be able to move through them, there are certain, you might call them, indicators. And an angelic indicator is someone that will give a person some valid signs of assistance and help in times perhaps of maybe need, but also in times of willful actuation of supreme or divine energy or divine power. And that these are things that are classified. And when a person enters in, there's coming, counting from the outside in, you move in toward the third psychic circles. In other words, you've passed many of the progress areas of becoming a civilized person, intelligent, using intelligence, and also, first of all, being able to be curious enough or driven enough to look for truth and seek the divine. And when you've made that inner commitment, is a point in which you might say your love relationship with truth, which ends up being that relationship to the first source and center through spiritual entanglement, becomes strong enough and valid enough that you are in service toward the destiny of higher groups of people, more groups of people. And because of that, these angelics, which may include secondary midwares, become apparent. And the working of what would be considered miracles begin to appear. Some of the ways in which a midware is capable of manifesting service under the willful dictates of a mortal, an individual in service, you might say divine service. And that's essentially what we're, you know, being developed for, divine service. And we begin to actuate the need or the will to seek out the betterment of a situation or things which is our own choosing. In other words, let's look at some of the events that can happen in terms of a activity a midware did about lending a real, you might say, near physical hand in releasing a person from prison, in the being locked up in prison, and actually having the doors. This is the accounting of where midwares function in releasing some of the apostles who were locked up in prison. It's been given the miraculous, you might say, indication that it was done miraculously by the Holy Spirit, but it was actually done by a midwayer. Midwayers have also performed some feats which I guess because of the necessity to ensure strong you might say faith in terms of people who, you know, trying to follow a particular saint, let's say sainted, the indications of levitation, where this individual, I forgot which saint it was on many occasions levitated above the ground, and witness even drawn how he levitated, and this was done by a midwayer. They have sometimes the capacity to act at that level. Many times, some of the more or less naughty midwayers are known as poker guys, and actually do fly things around, knock things around, and they sometimes want to get your attention. In the new phenomena, the phenomena which is called the 1111 phenomena, where people look around and they see 1111 on their clocks. For myself, I've been filling up gas and it clicks off, and you know, so many dollars, I think it was, you know, and you see 1111 there, you know, $11.11 or something like that. And they happens consistently many times. The indicator is that these midwayers are trying to get the attention of humans. My daughter was talking about seeing it all the time. A friend of mine says he kept seeing 1111. I don't know what this means, and I told him, you have to check into the fact that there are, through your family many times, midwayers that have been in service. And his family was interesting. I found out that his family goes back to Plymouth. It's where the Pilgrims kind of landed. And, of course, the Pilgrims were here for religious liberty in Plymouth Rock, yeah? Mm-hmm. And I never visited. Did you ever go to that place?
Yes.
Ah.
Up in Massachusetts?
Yeah. Well, the story is that that's...
That's a rock with 1620 on it.
Uh-huh. And he traces his lineages toward that. And he's Hawaiian, you know, but his name is Wright. So later you find out that of that line that they came to Hawaii and probably in the whaling industry and married a Hawaiian lady and such. But because of that, many midwayers have followed the families through helping their families. He talked about many times in which there was need for something to happen. And his dad went through a Korean War battle. There was need for help. They were looking for volunteers to drive this particular Jeep with a trailer. Never told them what it was all about, just where to go. And they said, you need any volunteer. And they didn't order anyone to do it. They said, we're asking for a volunteer. Then they looked around and nobody was volunteering. And you could hear lots of explosions and booms and stuff ahead where they were to drive to. So they knew there was an active, you know, battlefront there. And he was new, and he went on and said, okay, he go ahead and drive it. So he took the Jeep and trailer and drove up the road. At first it was pretty smooth going, and then it started getting very active. And there's a lot of explosions, a lot of bombs and stuff going off, and gunfire, and kept on driving, because that's his intonation. He just kept on going. And through it all, he made it. He drove the Jeep up to this outpost and told them, you know, he's here. He's told to bring this Jeep with his trailer. In the Jeep was, I think one other person, and I think that person didn't make it. So he jumps out of the Jeep, and all of the tires on his Jeep were flat, and all the tires on his trailer with two tires, they were flat, and there were bullet holes all over the place. And he was not hurt at all. But what was interesting was they went and uncovered the trailer, which was under, they had a tarp over the trailer bound down, and they took it off. And under the tarp was all this live ammunition and artillery ammunition. None of it lit off. None of it at all exploded.
Mm.
And he survived that. And he, it was amazing. It was like his lineage was so great that after, his number of children, he had like 8 or 9 kids, and of the 8 or 9 kids, and he had like 30 or 40 grandkids or something, and so many more great grandkids, and just an amazing amount of lineage of children, great grandchildren, and great great grandchildren, and it was almost like he had to have that. His brothers didn't have that kind of number of kids, and it's very, very unusual. So it was sort of like it was preserved. And then this, who is one of his sons, told me about his 11/11 experience, and how he had, fallen off a ship, a tugboat actually, in rough seas, but it was as if he had an unusual way of hooking himself into the rail, and that's not usual. Just happened to be stepping in that direction, and then almost when the big wave came and almost knocked him overboard, his one foot was locked into the rail, so he didn't fall overboard. And many other experiences, but then I told him why he has it, because he has, they're trying to get his attention, that he has greater service, and he needs to straighten up and get in alignment with his destiny, his higher destiny. It's more than animal survival, but a lot of the extent of animal survival, they were assisting him in. Interestingly enough, that is the area in which midwares are more, you might say, able to contact us, because of the nature of their interface with us, they understand the animal need. But an angelic is more attuned toward our spiritual need, our higher destiny, past and above the basis of the animal need. You know, survival, food, shelter, clothing, safety. These are all part of the outermost psychic circles to enter in with the intent of discovering or, you might say, believing in a higher source. And then the seeking for and discovery of the higher source. So, yeah, midwares are functional beings. And they function down at many times right at that level of, you might say, base need and safety. And find them, these 1111, they're really struggling to become more spiritualized. In a primitive tribe, there was that tribe had a particular midwayer which would perform healing miracles necessary. And they would use certain ways in which this particular midwayer would be called to assist them in perhaps sometimes physical healing or situations of survival. And this is in New Guinea, you know, I mean, these are the people who are known for cannibalism and all of that stuff. So primitive people. And what had happened was a missionary came in, and that particular tribe or village converted to Christ, Jesus Christ, with the understanding of the high personal relationship that they had attained. And it was interesting what had happened was that there was a very last ceremony that was done, and it was done by the witch doctor, or it would be called the witch doctor. And the midwayer left, but in leaving, he had done something interesting. Clearing and move into the, you know, I guess the rough area. They almost as if, you know, they saw an image, just the branches, like moving through the branches and the grass, like somebody walking away. And they never had any more of these experiences interfacing them anymore, because they had risen up to a higher spiritual plane, you might say, or entered into a spiritual plane that was right on, you might say, and it, because of their acceptance of it, the midwayer left and made note, like, you know, like a wake of movement through the jungle. They could see it, like penetrating and disappeared and never came back. Which is an interesting story that was told by this particular missionary. There are other missionaries who ended up in the stew pot, though. Not quite in the stew pot, but, you know, they didn't make it. But he did. So, mm-hmm. And that's the story of an actual function of a midwayer. And I'm also giving you some other ideas. But the 1111, if anyone out there is experiencing, seeing these numbers like 1111, especially 1111, because that is the number of the faithful midwayer, secondary midwayers, which included some primary, but primary were a little different.
I see 1111 a lot.
You do?
Yes, I commented about that for a decade. Yeah.
Just
I had this nice digital clock. I had a few of them in the house. Mm-hmm. And when I look at it, instead of the time being on there, it would have four lines. 11:11.
11:11, yeah. But that's the time, right?
Yeah, that's the time, but it didn't have any numbers. It just had these four lines coming down. It's like, oh, look at that.
Mm-hmm. And it was, it's almost like somebody turned your head, look now.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. And yeah. And it kind of like telling you that they're around you and in service. And they want you to begin. The actuator, believe it or not, there is one idea in the Bible, almost in terms of doing something in terms of financial, physical. You know, if you were to, like, let's say this broadcast, mm-hmm. podcast, people would to send something because it is facilitating the propagation of higher truth and in service, you might say, of God through, you know, the window of truth. There is actual reward for that particular area where it's kind of like, command me now herewith and see not if I will not open the windows of heaven and open a blessing or happiness that you won't have room to contain. And it's talking about actual physical room to contain as well as, you know, just an abundance of happiness. So this is accomplished because one would, you know, kind of facilitate or help. And, you know, so that has been true. That's what makes many of churches function. It's not because these churches are, you know, what do you call it? Putting people under pressure to donate. And there are many that do. But those who are willing people. I remember in my ministry days, a nice older man came over and he just stuck some money in my hand and it was considerable. He said, please take this. And I told him, I can't take it from you, you know. And then he said something that was kind of amazing. He says, no. And he started to lecture me, and he was very stern about it. He says, no, you must take it. And if anyone gives you money or anything, do not deny them their blessing. Because if you don't take it, then you would hurt me. So I said, okay, I'll take it, you know. Inevitably, he was, you know, a happy man and had many other things that happened in his life that were good. But one of the things he learned about was this particular area of sharing. So that is something that has taken place, at least with one individual that we know about for this podcast. And it will result in, you might say, the windows of heaven opening up. But it has to do with now the willful, commanding me now herewith. This is this particular command or willful. In other words, your will becomes divine. And you can actuate, you might say, the activity of many of these, like, servants, which are the midwares, and all they're waiting for is an assignment from, you might say, mortal, of, you know, higher divine destiny, a willed creature who is in alignment with divine will, but doesn't know it many times that their will is in alignment with divinity. And this is, be perfect, even as God is perfect. Actuate your will in the divine sense, even as, you know, it is being pressed onto a person's mind or heart to actuate something. And many times you think it's far beyond your ability, and that's where the working of miracles is, the energy movement of healing miracles, where, you know, just a touch, and then all of a sudden you become a channel for, you know, holy and divine spiritual energy, which is something that is, you might call it, nearly miraculous. But on the area where the midwares, getting back to the midwares and the 1111, they tend to function down at the near animal level of human need. And we're assistant many times in terms of getting a successful hunt and, you know, on primitive man. But in today's society, they function, you know, preventing, you know, sometimes some pretty bad situations that could have happened. Perhaps driving in a, you know, snowstorm or something, and before it all happens, they kind of direct you away from it. In one way or another, they actually can cause you to have a little breakdown that's in a safe spot. And you wonder, okay, car stop here, you know. And then you find out, wow, just down the road, there was this, you know, multi-car thing that happened. So these are kinds of stuff that can happen. But on one area is where the willful activity, you can assign activity if you are, you know, actually doing, you might say, physical service, and or taking of one's own resources. Some of them can be, it can be any kind of resources. I remember a friend, that same individual that went through all that bombing and stuff, he would come over and give me some fish. And I said, I'm a fisherman too, so I didn't wonder why you gave me fish. But it was one of my favorite kinds, and I really never really took the time to go catch them. And he was continuously moving on an upward projection of greater and greater success and finding them, because a lot of it has to do with the luck of the hunt. Believe it or not, fish have a tail and they don't stay in the same place. So your supposed fishing hole isn't always filled with the same group of fish, so you got to go hunt them down. And a lot of times that hunting experience is assisted. And very interesting. You know, it's assisted by these midwares. Yeah. And that's the contact point that they are more able to. But when we become more and more, we enter into the inner third, second, and first areas of spirituality, we really become much more spiritual. And then angelics start to move in assistant in a higher realm of working in the divine nature. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me give you Kathleen's questions. This is from a couple days ago. She says, hi, Curtis and Michael. Merry Christmas to you and your families and all the listeners of these podcasts and the Shaharons who so lovingly guide us. A full heart of thanks for what you have given us and joyful greetings also. Michael, I was so surprised last week when you mentioned the wave of energy that is being predicted to hit us on the 26th of this month, because I had been looking into that information also, and it was nice to hear you take on all of that. And now it seems that in the last 3 days or so, I've been feeling quite strong energies coming in. Although these energies are strong, they feel very nice, and I would like to ask if the Shaharons would comment on these energies I am feeling, and also, if possible, on this wave of energy predicted to hit on the 26th. Signed, love and joy, Kathleen.
This is Theotodoctic. I will take this question and begin to summarize an answer. Although it can be very complex in its nature because of energetics being confused between particle energy, you know, and many force energies, as well as energies which are both spiritual and physical. These are an important area of the evolutionary process. You see, you are first physical as a living creature, and the ascent of your kind, your humankind, above its present level cannot be only attributed towards selective, you might say, genetic betterment through selective advantage, where you might say of having groups of people perhaps have a certain nature for the abilities to advance civilization on your planet. There are other aspects where your actual you might say developmental progress is catapulted forward by a energetic wave. This first impinges upon the physical, but with it only being physical, it would not necessarily bring about the kind of changes that are formulative. Let me give you an idea. If you're a sculptor working with a basic lump of clay, and you decide that you would like to sculpt a particular object, or let's say you would like to sculpt a animal of one sort or another, a copy of it, in its physical form. You would take it and press upon it and mold it into the shape, but basically raw, and enable it to move forward. This is the physical wave of energy, the actual pressing upon it and the movement upon it. But the sculptor has in themselves a much more skillful wave of energy, an intelligence, a perceptive ability that guides the ability, the hand, toward producing the sculpture. At the end, the more skillful it is, the sculptor is, the more closely it would resemble the actual object to be sculpted. This is at the level in which you as humans are able to move and dictate. But at the level in which life is sculpted requires not only force energy, But in the enlivenment of, you might say, divine guidance, this comes through the awakening of a great mystery, even to us, of how such organization takes place. For fundamentally, the Creator is able to sculpt, but needs energy, as you would need your hand energy to press upon a lump of clay to form the change. Yes, there is indeed energy that will take place. But interestingly enough, the changes that will take place within one's own physical body have a direct relationship toward your spiritual attunement, acumen, ability to receive the touch. Then these changes will enrapture you. And there are many that will bring forward a type of embrace, the divine embrace, great loving. And it brings about a type of impression that is, you might say, in a primitive area, like the sculptor's impression in sculpting. And it leaves within your soul a higher nature and impression. But if one is in attuned to the divine hand, the force energy that does impinge upon you may not leave anything but a scar. Much like a accidental impression made upon the lump of clay, not guided by any skillful hand, but simply by a falling object upon it, leaving a dent and saying, wow, something changed me. Therefore, one must consider more than the force energy that is predicted. And they will see a sculpting, an enlivenment, planetary geologic changes, but along with them, when one is attuned to the divine energies, the divine guidance, much like the mind energy within the sculptor, the physical energy produces the actual object of sculpting, the final product. And since you are in part physical, in part morantial in your soul, and you are a receptive group in mindful ability and spiritual awakening, and open to the circuit of divine love, the order of which brings forth that higher realization of change. Yes, the progress will be closer and closer inward in these circles of psychic development. First the physical, and then the spiritual movements inward, the results of which would give one the higher abilities and even the higher wisdoms that are necessary to command even these who are in service on another level. Therefore, take this as a hint, not necessarily the grand, you might say, lesson, because the hint of direction is your actuation toward the greater success and the awakening of many more true and wonderful gifts of awakening. The insight toward future events, the insight of knowing the wisdom circuit that truly is available to you all as it is to us. Therefore, you navigate your life successfully and at a higher level in awakening. This can take place on a very large scale, as those whose hearts and minds are tuned toward acceptance and acceptance of greater awakening, they may not know what it is, but it will happen. Others may not know what it is and refuse it from happening. Such is the nature of personal will. Therefore, choose wisely and choose life. I see a tadaktik. Shaurun, bid you farewell.
Farewell, Shaharon. Thank you for coming on. Love when you're listening. That's just great. And I like what you said about the wisdom circuit. Very interesting. It's a lot to absorb.
I think he kind of knows it is.
Yeah, he knows. It's that's... Farewell, Shaharon. So does Shaharon pause on these Tuesdays to listen? Or is this just something that he hears as he continues his day?
Well, you might say, we were talking about plain old telephone service.
Yes.
POTS. You were commenting earlier about how Skype kind of was much better, but last week we had some problems with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Then, right? And then we talked about plain old telephone service.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to try to imagine a circuit that is very active and lively, you know, telepathic communication is very interesting. It happens when you want to communicate. Not necessarily that easily. It happens when you refuse to communicate. So if you're a willing, you might say you are willing to receive, the enabler will be able to enable an insight continuously. It's like this very active circuit. So it's not like they're limited as we're limited. Just, yeah, so. But, you know, it works. And if you think that they're monitoring, it's much better to think that they're always there to help.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They're not there to, you know, peek in on your private times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's because of just the idea that there is a question that is requested of them and is received, you know, through an active portal, active circuit, which is primarily me right now, because that's the way it's been arranged. But on another level, people can later attain in their development of the psychic, penetration into the psychic circles, much more active personal understanding and sharing. And it is for the benefit, for the building up and strengthening of people's understanding of where the destiny of their lives are. Far beyond the present level of physical life. Yet, the interesting, you know, thing that I noted on about adjuster attunement was that, not adjuster attunement, but the nature of the midwares functioning at a more basic level in our lives. You know, something like, you know, hey, you know, it's kind of part of the more animal aspect of our lives. They actually understand a lot more about that than you think. And they function with what we consider more primitive man. But anyway, the idea is that the active listening, you might call it, there's a term active listening, which is, you know, when you're listening, you can, if you have active listening, you are able to interact with the one that gives you the information or gives you the information that you're listening to. So there's this going back and forth. And this highly active listening is in terms of having that, I'd say, built-in relationship circuit that makes active listening truly active. That was like a kind of a vogue statement, you know, in terms of how people need to, you know, become more, you know, enabled, I guess, in learning, is to apply the principles of active listening.
Active listening.
Yeah. You might say active listening is, you know, what is happening with the Shahanoons, except they're, you know, their active listening is focused on, you know, sometimes just a personality, which is me, personality right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're the group that, you know, kind of asked me to help after looking them up, just walking through there, that gigantic, it's a beautiful, you know, giant nautilus shell. That was their architecture, moving into their temple, you might say. I don't know if you want to call it a temple, but it was like their place of activity, spiritual activity. Take special invite, and not anybody can go in there. And I was one of the, my guide was not permitted in there to participate or go into the inner chamber until, you know, they receive special permission. Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Today I got an email from Jim from North Wales, and he says, subject matter is new money. Hi Curtis, Nancy Leader has often mentioned that a guy named Benjamin Fulford, remember him, Michael, I used to listen to him a lot. Oh, I have my own comment, but anyway, a guy named Benjamin Fulford has a lot of good inside knowledge about the ugly governmental goings-on. She says he gets a lot of things right, but not everything. In one of his recent reports, he said that the U.S. will soon be getting new currency, continental dollars. Here's a link to the new bills. He provides the link, and you can see it on the listen page. I think you'll be most interested, he says, in the new $100 bill. Take care, Jim. And the $100 bill has Nikola Tesla on the one side, and the other side has the inside of his laboratory at Colorado Springs with the primary and the secondary coil. Secondary coil looks like a fence around there, and lightning or big bolts of electrical waves you can see going from one coil to the tune coil, and he's sitting right there. But Benjamin Fulford, his background has his grandfather wanting to, I forget the story, I used to be so in tune with Benjamin Fulford because his grandfather was really in tune with Tesla, and I forget exactly how right at the moment, but
his grandfather was run over because he was going to help Tesla.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was run over.
I wonder how. You know, was it an accident?
It didn't seem like an accident from the way Benjamin Fulford described it, but I find he's over in Japan, and right. I finally got him on the phone, and I mentioned something about, I mean, I've been studying Tesla for a long time and know a lot of things I'll say other people don't know about Tesla, and I said something to Benjamin Fulford along that line, and he could have said something positive about Tesla, but instead he called me some nut off the internet. he just didn't even take a moment to hear what I had to say about Tesla. Like, he wasn't really interested. And took the wind out of my sails for Benjamin Fulford, and I really haven't been listening to him. But I imagine he's still in Japan, and I did find him very interesting. But he was going on the story of Tesla in his background, and then he didn't want to hear anything about Tesla. Like, okay, well, tell me something. It's like when you called me and said that you had this experience also. And I go, oh, yeah, well, tell me. And you talked to me for a while, and then I thought, wow, this is very interesting. Let's start recording and see where this goes. And that was hour number one. And
hasn't ended yet.
Michael, you told the whole story in the first hour.
Yeah.
First hour, you told the whole story. And I thought, well, you know, so we record the next hour. And that's when you brought up the Urantia book. Mm-hmm. And it's just been going on since then.
The Urantia Book Project is really something that will assist, you might call it, the elevation of, you know, our consciousness, be able to accept the concept that, you know, heaven is an actual functional civilization far beyond our imagination, but it is. But they're trying to break us in and allow us to walk into it at levels that are functional. In other words, you're not going to throw us into, you know, disaster. And of course, they want to make sure that we are properly shielded from, you know, doing some dastardly deeds because of our base nature of selfish ambition, which is opposed to the way, you might say, heaven works. Heaven doesn't work on selfish ambition. And it has an end. And if you look at, you know, pure selfish ambition, and you look at Donald Trump, you know, if he was purely moving in selfish ambition, he would never have run for the president of the United States. He'd keep going, you know, bigger and richer and keep trying to rule the world and whatever. But this was not to rule at all. So different kind of ambition to get torn apart and you know, pulled over the rack of, you might say, public, supposed contrived public opinion. And that is something that is the road, you might say, to great blessing and happiness, because it will end up with true results. But this world is entangled, you might say, between, or straddling between the physical base needs of, you know, making a person, you know, quiet and kind of functional, and the ascension, whole point of ascending past, through, and moving past and through life onto the higher plane of Rhea, where real eternal life resides.
Mm-hmm.
At Veranda Deck, Most High, is not somebody that you just visit on. It's like way harder to see than the President of the United States. Or, you know, getting a message way harder. But it is a very real thing that happened, and the message remains. And that's the reason, I guess, that this continues to be a portal of information and messaging.
And interesting.
Worldwide. It's made changes worldwide.
Yeah, worldwide. We have in a 4-month period, we have over 130 countries tuning into HelloEarth.info.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know, if maybe some of them just want to listen to the English. But, you know.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of reasons out there. But it's interesting that that it has continued and stays interesting. And love when Shaharon comes on. Thank you, Fediatik Shaharon, for popping in to answer Kathleen's question. Thank you, Kathleen, for sending that wonderful question. And I just wanted to say thank you, Lynn, a couple weeks ago, or last week also, to about that your question about reincarnation. Since the Urantia book states that there is no such thing as reincarnation, I've come to the conclusion that people who have reincarnational memories are really picking up on the previous experiences of a thought adjuster. I just, wow, that is just right on the dot. Interesting. And the pineal gland, can it calcify? And is it something that Lucifer messed with to keep us from our thought adjusters? So, like you said, Michael, the Urantia book doesn't have everything in there. And our listeners know what's missing, and it's nice they can ask you.
Mm-hmm.
It is very interesting.
There's a general, many times very general descriptions, other times very specific and very detailed. But what is wonderful about it is my perspective is based on experience. And when I look at the Urantia book's confirmation of many of the things I experienced in the New Jerusalem orbiting Saturn as an architectural sphere and habitation, it's actually a school. It's more than a habitation. So you might say a visiting. You go visit this place, and it's got a spaceport and everything, and you go to Christ Michael of Nebadon and of Salvington. You know, the idea of this Creator Son, His own sphere, and we got it locked here, right now, right here in our own solar system, as a luminous sphere. And all Creator Sun spheres are luminous. The other architectural spheres are nearly non-reflective and non-luminous. So
That is His own sphere, right in our neighborhood.
Yeah, it's sort of like His. I don't know, His summer home, I guess. I don't know if you would call it that. You know, there's a lot that He has to take care of, you might call it, but this area has to go through a type of purification because of the fact that there's so much of the legacy of the Lucifer Rebellion. And philosophically, the Lucifer Rebellion is not necessarily considered an absolute evil. Instead, it is considered actuator of good. When the instigator of good impresses himself within it, and of course, that's where the battle is. The ultimate thing is you have a very strong race of being, people, that come out of it, that learn a lot and understand where their basic weaknesses are. Mm. Anyway, the weaknesses many times tend to just flow right back to the fact that we are physical beings with the limitations of being physical. And some of our, drive finds ourselves that, moving in that direction. But if we are on the ascent level, then we kind of let those things pass and move on to the next area of exploration, not realizing that that area of exploration is actual development, of our divine nature.
And this wave of energy that's predicted to hit the day after Christmas?
I guess so, but I'm going on a trip to, Japan.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. Be gone about that time. So I'm not been receiving, disaster images. But, we've been getting so many disasters all over the place. So
you'll be in Japan next Tuesday?
Yes.
Okay. So everybody hears that. We won't be recording next Tuesday then. And that's going to be the day after the 26th, so let's steer clear of the ocean. Any time of day that this is going to take place, or...
I'm not the one who has, this. Some people are putting that out, and all I do is I kind of peek into my the informational source that we have,
mm-hmm.
and like that is something that we got to watch out for,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see it. But I thought I'd repeat the idea that some people are, talking about it and see if we can keep ourselves in a situation where we are aware, made aware, and stay aware, not terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, stay on balance.
Good. Balance, that's a good idea.
Yeah. You still gotta keep on going. We're in a ship. We're moving along. Can't hide. But life is something that we experience, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Moving through life's experience. So don't, shortchange oneself because of what, is implied. Look around and use your sensory abilities. We have higher sensory abilities that can confirm something like that. But it looks like there will be energetics coming through, and according to what Theotodoct summarized or tried to give us a hint on, is that if we are aligned to you might say, the divine will. And our nature is, you might say, becoming more like the will of God, or becoming perfect even as God is perfect, then this wave of energy will be guided into our lives, much like the sculptor sculpting skillfully the object of their skill or their intent, rather than just an accidental lump on bump or whatever, you know. It's meaningless, you know. Yeah. Well, and I believe that so many times, that scientists try to figure out what makes everything work. They can look at it, cut it short almost of death, and see, okay, we're going to try to find the secret of what makes this thing alive. And it still hasn't been broken. They can mess with genetics, and it's pretty primitive how they do it, you know, but it works to a degree. But imagine it happening at a much more skillful level where the hand of the divine is involved, you know, rather than just a 22 caliber bullet loaded with fine particles of gold seeded with the genetic signals they want to implant into a gene spliced, you know, technology. And bang, that's how it goes. And that's and it's still, they call it a gene gun. You look it up, it's for real. And that's how different our, you know, you can have some sculpture that says, I want to make something out of this lump of clay, and he takes a buckshot, blasts it with a buckshot, and says, look, see what I did. It's pretty primitive, where you have a truly masterful sculpture come out with a real work of art, guided by, you know, a very principled mind. This is what I believe those who in fact, I know those who are getting themselves more and more attuned are being actually sculpted, and may, in a physical sense, may need some adjustment in terms of, you know, their physical being. But yeah, it's more on the area of eternal changes versus, you know, temporary stuff. Anyway, this is a little commentary. Just sort of repeating what Sharon, Theotodactic, the one who makes the impressions of God, you know, real or understandable. Religion tends to make it kind of hard to understand.
Well,
okay.
Time to say aloha and Merry Christmas to everyone. We all say Merry Christmas to everyone, and a new year is coming up. And
that is indeed one of the quick changes that has already happened on the politically correct paradigm shift.
Yes.
Years, you know, when I said that that the year, the paradigm shift, well, now people are openly saying Merry Christmas now.
Yes.
And that was something that has made a very quick change, turnabout.
On the last few rallies that Donald Trump did, well, they were like thank you rallies. I said to Marcy, oh, look, in the background, instead of American flags, Christmas trees.
just his subtle
way of saying Merry Christmas and this is America.
Yeah. Yeah. In God we trust.
In God we trust, yes.
Very much. And like I said, the sculptor's hand, the master's hand, is involved. And that is something that really does happen.
And I like how you said Donald Trump had highly experienced thought adjusters. They weren't new. Uh-huh. New young thought adjusters.
Virgin adjusters.
Mm-hmm. Well, aloha, Michael. Have a good trip to Japan and safe journey for you and your wife. And we'll be back again, I guess, in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Next year, probably.
Next year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'll be the 3rd of, probably the 3rd of January.
Yeah.
All right. Happy New Year, everyone.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.